Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to 48 Hours ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Need more true crime in your life? An Audible membership can solve that. Audible is the ultimate destination for thrilling audio entertainment. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Don't miss The Serial Killer's Apprentice by Katherine Ramsland and Tracy Allman. It follows the true story of how Houston's deadliest murder turned a kid into a killer in training. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/48hours or text 48 hours to 500-500. That's audible.com/48hours or text 48 hours to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. audible.com/48hours.
This episode is brought to you in part by June's Journey. Picture it, the glamour of the roaring 20s wrapped in a mystery that only you can solve. Dive into June Parker's captivating quest to uncover scandalous family secrets. With your keen eye for detail, find hidden clues and solve mind-boggling puzzles. It's all about observation, intrigue, and drama. But beware. Each clue leads deeper into a thrilling storyline filled with danger and romance. June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Amy wrote, "Shadows are created around us whenever something or someone blocks the light. We are created to live in the light. He is calling me out of the darkness. Turn toward the light and the truth."
Amy's outlet was her journaling. She wrote to me about the Bible and having faith. I believe that her faith was important to her because she lived by her faith. She was the salt of the earth, genuine and loving. I found out that Amy had passed in a phone call from our mutual friend. In the next sentence, I found out how she had passed. It's not a phone call, you know, you want to get.
911, the sign is recorded. What's the address of your emergency?
Hi, this is Brian Tanya. I'm at North Road. My wife just shot herself. Can you send me some help?
All right, Brian, we'll get him right out there, okay?
I remember my supervisor telling me we have a death investigation in Westfield, and it's a police officer's wife. That was a rarity to me. I had not experienced a case like that.
She's gone, I'm sorry. God.
Okay, are you sure?
Yes.
Brian's role at the Westfield Police Department, he was their evidence guy in the detective bureau.
We both knew Brian. He was very well respected.
When you walked in the Fannian house, what did you see?
Then I walked into the dining room, and that's when I observed the body of Amy Fannian and a pool of blood on the floor.
With a gunshot to the right side of her head.
I saw the .45 caliber Smith & Wesson firearm on the stairs that led to the breezeway. There was a police radio, paperwork, mail, and so forth. Chairs pushed about.
And on top of this dining room table, you had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich intact on a plate. You had an empty plate that had some blood smear on it.
What was Brian's demeanor when you arrived?
He seemed like he was in a state of shock. He was looking straight ahead.
Just snapped. The gun just exploded. It was just so quick. Didn't hesitate at all.
I'm the only one that could make her that angry.
I offered him my condolences. I told Brian that, you know, that I was going to conduct a thorough investigation, that it was going to be by the numbers.
Is it standard for the district attorney's office to be involved in a suicide investigation?
Yes. part of our duties at the district attorney's office was to investigate all deaths.
What can this deceased tell us about what happened right before she found herself in that state? So I'm taking in everything that I can about that scene, and I saw the entry wound to her head. It didn't seem right in that moment. How would something like that happen?
Nikki Batiste reports, the detective's wife.
It was 1 p.m. on May 8, 2018, when Massachusetts State Police detectives arrived at a farmhouse in Westfield. 51-year-old Amy Fannion lay dead in the dining room from a single gunshot wound to the head. Detective Mike McNally.
Amy was essentially in a pile of blood that was beginning to congeal under her left side.
Amy's husband, Brian Fannion, a detective in the Westfield Police Department, had called 911 minutes earlier, reporting that his wife had shot herself. The dining room, rearranged to accommodate medical personnel, was in disarray as detectives worked to identify clues of what may have happened.
There was a blood spatter around that window frame from that dining room into the breezeway. There was a pair of glasses that looked like it had some kind of red-brown spatter on it.
And then there was the bullet. Detectives Brendan O'Toole and Mike Blanchett.
The actual projectile was in that front enclosed porch area. The spent shell casing was still in the dining room.
We could see the direction that it traveled through Amy's head. That round impacted that dresser, came to a rest right around there in the breezeway.
Brian was sitting in a chair with his back to the wall. And he's with the chief of police from the Westfield Police Department, who's talking with him. Everyone was in a state of shock.
Everyone, including Amy's brother, Eric Hansen, who told detectives that he had just finished playing disc golf behind the house when he heard Brian's cry for help. And that's when he walked into the house, saw Amy on the floor, a gun next to her, and Brian holding Amy's hand.
So he picked up the gun himself and moved it out of Brian's reach.
Because he was worried about Brian's state of mind, having just lost his wife.
Yes.
What kind of gun was used?
It was a Smith & Wesson M&P 45, Brian Fannion's duty weapon.
Did that give you any pause that it was Brian Fannion's weapon?
Yes, it gave me pause. At this point, I know that I'm going to really do a detailed investigation.
To avoid conflict of interest, O'Toole said he decided that his unit, the Massachusetts State Police, would be the sole investigators, and he wanted to get Brian away from the house to get a statement.
I asked if he would accompany me to the Massachusetts State Police barracks in Russell, and I took a tape-recorded statement from him.
Tuesday, May 8th, it's 2:41 p.m. I'm with Brian Fannion. Brian, do you understand I got a recorder on right now?
Yes.
Brian told Detective O'Toole that he left his office at the Westfield Police Station around 11:45 a.m. and drove to North Road to meet his wife, who was on her way home to prepare their lunch.
What was she making?
Butter and jelly sandwiches.
Brian said that when he arrived, they continued an argument from the night prior. An argument that had gotten pretty heated that evening.
When you say heated, I guess, well,
just, I don't know. She just was very angry.
Okay. What was the argument about?
I'm retiring soon. We're discussing what each of us expects retirement to be.
Brian said he told Amy that he didn't want to spend his retirement maintaining their 200-year-old home, which Amy still loved. They also discussed their aging dog and his reluctance to get another one.
Yeah, I don't want to be tied down by a dog.
Yeah.
She always wants to have a dog. Yeah. I want to travel more than she does.
According to Brian, that afternoon during lunch, Amy told him she had scheduled them to attend a family member's play on the day Brian wanted to attend a disc golf tournament.
I just just say, no, I don't like that stuff. Why would you commit me when you're without asking?
That's when, according to Brian, things soon took a turn for the worse.
I took my gun out of the holster and put it on our hutch because I had to use the bathroom.
Where's the hutch located?
In the dining room.
Brian said he closed the bathroom door, and when he came out, Amy had the gun in her hand.
She has the gun pointed up to the right side of her head. What did you hear her say?
I think she said, I guess, you don't want me around, or you don't want to be around me.
Was she seated, or was she?
No, she stood up.
She was standing?
Okay.
According to Brian, he was 4 to 5 feet away when he tried to stop Amy from pulling the trigger.
Tried to get to her. I almost did.
Where'd you
the
go?
Gun just exploded. It was just so quick. I didn't hesitate at all. I just went over and I just held her hands. Tried to... She's held her hands.
911, the signs recorded. What's the address?
Brian called 911 and yelled out to Amy's brother, Eric, for help.
Eric, how do you spell your last name, Hansen?
H-A-N-S-E-N.
Eric told detectives that Brian said he and Amy had been having a tense argument.
And she grabbed the gun. He just was so distraught.
Did he say what they were arguing about?
No. I was just trying to console him and say, it's not your fault, it's not your fault.
Amy's death had shocked the Westfield community.
My name is Stephanie Barry, and I'm a reporter for the Republican in Springfield, Massachusetts. Amy's maiden name was Hansen. She came from a fairly large family. She and her sisters were all known as some of the prettiest girls in school, some of the smartest, and some of the nicest.
It was 1983 when 16-year-old Amy met 19-year-old Brian Fannion. Fannion came from a long line of police officers and politicians. And in Westfield, the Fannion name was a source of pride.
The Fannions were kind of like the Kennedys of Westfield. They were well-regarded.
Brian and Amy tied the knot in 1985, and the couple eventually had two children, Travis and Victoria. Amy's close friend, Terry Licardi, says Amy loved being a stay-at-home mom.
Amy's focus was raising her children. She thought that being a parent was the best job in the whole world.
The Fannions, deeply committed to their faith, dedicated their lives to God and community service, with Brian serving as a church deacon and working as a missionary to build wells in Mexico. After 30 years of marriage, the Fannions were planning their next phase of life when those plans derailed.
Is there any knowledge that Amy Fannion had any mental health issues or suffered from depression?
So I asked Brian, and he mentioned many years earlier when she was having some psychological issues and was on medicine for a period of time. Other than that, nothing recent.
But what Brian did stress was that Amy had bouts with anger.
She had a temper, but she hid it well from everyone but me. She only got that angry when we were alone.
Midway into the interview, Detective O'Toole asked Brian if there were any female friends in his life.
I have a woman who lives in Pittsfield that I met recently. I did a mission trip to Mexico, and we became good friends.
What's that lady's name?
Corey.
Does she have a last name, or Corey?
Yeah, Knowles. K-N-O-W-L-E-S. You guys aren't going to contact her, are you?
A sense of safety is important to everyone, and that's why I want to talk to you about Simply Safe. It's an advanced security system that protects your entire home so you can rest easy. Simply Safe is completely customizable with advanced sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. You can have 24/7 professional home monitoring for less than $1 a day. So try Simply Safe for 60 days risk-free. If you don't love it, you can return your system for a full refund. Plus, we're offering listeners 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Don't wait. Visit simplysafe.com/48hours. That's simplysafe.com/48hours. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Don't waste time on apps that don't work. Babbel's conversation-based teaching prepares you for real-life situations. And studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/truecrime. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/truecrime, spelled BABBEL.com/truecrime. Rules and restrictions may apply.
For Detective O'Toole, Brian Fannion's admitted friendship with another woman raised questions. Brian had told detectives that Corinne Knowles, known as Corey, was a fellow missionary at a nearby church. The two met in November 2017 on a mission trip in Mexico, and a friendship developed. But it had never gone beyond that.
An emotional affair?
He said there was some flirting, but he qualified it that it wasn't...
Sexual?
A sexual. It was not a... His term was, it was not a friends with benefits.
At the end of the interview, Detective O'Toole asked Brian to turn over his personal phone.
I had turned off the recorder. And that's when Brian told me, he was like, you're going to see some things on there, and it's not what it appears to be.
A red flag for you?
Yeah, there's several red flags. As an investigator, you have to keep an open mind.
Within a week of Brian's interview, on May 14th, 2018, Amy's wake was held. Brian planted a tree in nearby Stanley Park in his wife's memory. But the investigation into her sudden death was just beginning. Detectives recovered a treasure trove of deleted text messages from Brian's phone.
There were just hundreds of texts that expanded the relationship that he was having with Corey.
On May 7th, the day before Amy died, Brian and Corey exchanged 72 text messages until 9:47 p.m. that evening. In one exchange at 9:23 p.m., Brian writes, "Good night, my love. I hope you have wonderful dreams of amazing days and nights to come." And Corey responds, "Good night, my love. I will dream of you and all that the future holds for us." The next morning at 10:30 a.m., Corey texts, "When can I hold you again?" To which Brian responds, "Not soon enough," turning into a very long morning.
And within an hour or two, Amy Fannion is dead.
Yes.
Head in route for a female party who possibly and potentially shot herself. Police en route.
Brian has not been entirely truthful to us at this point. And so we want to speak with him again.
On May 17th, 2018, 3 days after Amy's wake, Brian Fannion arrived at the district attorney's state police office for another round of questioning.
Brian, so we just needed to, clarify some things. We do know your Miranda rights, but I'm going to read them off this form.
The other day you didn't do this. Has something changed?
So you're not under arrest or anything.
Well, I know that. Yeah.
And on that same day across town, detectives met with Corey Knowles to learn more about her involvement with Brian.
If somebody was to say, "Who's Corey? Who are you?"
Corey Knowles, a 48-year-old wife, grandmother, and member of her church's choir.
told detectives that Brian's friendship helped her work through a troubled second marriage.
Brian's very easy to talk to. Nothing but affirmation and love, and I'm here for you.
But over time, their relationship moved from friendship to flirtation.
Did I feel passion for him? Absolutely.
By April 16th, 2018, 5 months into Brian and Corey's relationship, their texting gave way to something more intimate when Corey visited Brian's house before they left for volunteer work.
Was that the first time you were intimate, that you kissed on that April day, the 16th?
Yep.
And then where was that?
I want to say the kitchen. Because both I got there before Amy got home.
Corey told detectives that by late April, she and Brian were having passionate makeout sessions in her truck.
Brian left work early, met up with Corey in Westfield at Stanley Park, and they made out. There was some sexual touching.
But according to Corey, Brian could not perform.
A little bit more light because I'm still married to Amy.
We've seen the text messages. In all honesty, Brian, it looks like it's a lot more than a friendship, you know.
I know it escalated, and I'm completely embarrassed by it, ashamed of it. Shouldn't happen.
But a lot of people have affairs and...
Correct.
Don't kill their wife.
Correct.
Detective O'Toole then asks Brian to go back over his statement of what happened, beginning at the moment when Brian said he placed his gun on the hutch and went inside the bathroom.
All right, so you come out of the bathroom, right? And she's at the table. Where, just indicate, like, where between the table and the hutch?
Yeah.
And a chair right there?
I don't know if she was sitting or standing. I think she was standing.
I mean...
No, she... I think she was sitting.
Now, when we were trying to get these step-by-step details... He seemed to be wavering.
So you come out of the bathroom, okay, and then what's the first thing that happens?
I just remember her saying that you obviously don't want me around.
And then Detective O'Toole asked Brian to demonstrate what Amy did with the gun.
Just remember seeing her hand come up with the gun.
Towards her head.
Yeah.
So she puts it to the side of her head?
Yes.
Okay. And where was the gun when it went off? Was it in the
right
same
to her head?
But there is a problem. What Brian did not know was that a CSI report and Amy's autopsy results had arrived.
The gunshot entrance wound was not consistent with a self-inflicted wound.
Fair to say it took this case in a whole new direction?
Yes.
During the second interview with Brian Fannion, Detectives O'Toole and Blanchett found themselves facing a challenge that tested their experience as investigators.
This is not a normal interview for myself and Mike. We've done thousands of interviews. You know, we're pretty good at it. But it's hard when it's a police officer because he knows exactly how we work. It was a difficult interview.
There's a problem.
Detectives laid out what they considered to be crucial evidence in their investigation.
There's no indication whatsoever so far that she had a gun close to the side of her head.
Well, then you're wrong, because she did, because I saw that it happened.
You know,
how do you say there's no indication?
Well, I mean, that's what it's showing us right now.
The medical examiner listed Amy's manner of death as undetermined. And combined with CSI findings, investigators did not believe that Amy died of a self-inflicted wound.
I mean, there's no doubt she was shot, but the question is, from what distance?
It was right freaking there, I'm telling you. Well, do what you need to, but I'm telling you, it was right there.
In Amy's case, distance mattered. This is because with self-inflicted gunshot wounds, debris known as gunshot residue is expelled from the firearm and leaves a distinct pattern on and inside the wound known as stippling, as demonstrated here.
Like, Brian, you understand, like, guns and stippling and all that stuff.
I do, and I can't.
There's none honor, Brian. There's none honor.
There has to be, because the gun was there, right freaking there.
There's none honor.
Then they're wrong. I'm telling you, they're flat out wrong, because it was right freaking there.
The other option is you got pissed and you're a foot or a few feet away and you shot her in the head when she's sitting eating
didn't
a peanut
happen.
Butter sandwich.
Didn't happen.
Didn't happen?
Did not happen.
With Fannian's affair exposed and CSI reports in hand, detectives suspected Fannian had likely shot his wife, but they still needed more evidence. On May 24, 2018, detectives obtained a search warrant for Fannian's home, and when detectives arrived...
Brian asked if I was there to arrest him, and I told him I wasn't, and then he asked me if I thought he did it.
Were you surprised he asked you that?
I was noting it. I didn't know how to feel, and I didn't answer his question.
Detectives took additional measurements to analyze the trajectory of the bullet. Fannian's home electronics were confiscated, and at the same time, his desktop computer and laptop at the Westfield Police Station were seized for data extraction.
Do you see any signs that Brian Fannian planned to kill his wife? Any evidence that points to that?
We see a totality of all the evidence here. We're not the fact finders. We're detectives. So we collect all this information, and then it's going to be presented. Someone else is going to make a determination on that.
And that someone would be Hampton County Assistant District Attorney Mary Sandstrom. New to the homicide division, Sandstrom had arrived in Massachusetts by way of New York.
Is it fair to say you were a fish out of water a bit?
It's always hard not being from the area in which you prosecute. It's a very small, very intimately connected town. So, yes, you're never at an advantage where you don't know everybody by name.
Adding to the difficulty, Brian Fannian is a detective.
Yes.
Yep. And respected.
Very much in that community.
As spring gave way to summer, Corey ended her relationship with Fannian. And by early 2019, Fannian retired from the police force. The investigation into Amy's death continued.
We're still trying to get some testing done because we want to have as strong a case as possible before we go in before the grand jury.
And a complication in the form of a letter was among the case files. Amy's family members expressed their unfailing support of Brian Fannian, saying, "We are certain Amy took her own life." The letter was signed by Amy's siblings and even her own mother.
That's got to be tough for you.
It's an awkward position for a prosecutor where your victim family isn't supporting you. It was an odd spot to be in.
An odd spot, perhaps, but not a deterrent. On November 6, 2019, 17 months after Amy died, detectives arrived at Brian Fannian's door.
Brian came to the dining room door pretty quickly, as I recall it, and he said something to the effect of, "Come in." Then Mike Blanchett began to describe to Brian, "Brian, we have an arrest warrant for you."
Police say Brian Fannian told them that his wife shot herself with his gun while he was at home on a lunch break last year.
I remember telling him, "Put your hands behind your back." I took out my handcuffs.
Through their investigation, they only solidified their suspicion that Brian pulled the trigger.
He was eating assorted nuts. He was popping some in his mouth, and as he put his hands behind his back, we let him drop to the floor. We transported Brian to the Russell State Police Barracks. And he's processed, photographed, fingerprinted.
He stands accused of killing his wife in what was originally reported.
I assessed a feeling of despair on Brian's face. Like, I can't believe this is happening.
Sound the gifting panic alarm. We've all been there. You need to find the perfect gift. You have absolutely zero ideas, and you don't know where to start. Relax. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode takes the stress out of gifting, so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion.
Just answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like, and Gift Mode gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. Imagine pages of artisan espresso mugs for the coffee connoisseur in your life. Or for the pickleballer, customized paddle covers in every shade imaginable. Etsy's got you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Stephanie Barry, a crime reporter at the Republican newspaper, recalls the unusual scene that played out 15 miles away in Springfield, Massachusetts, inside the Hampton County Superior Court in early November 2019.
There's no one who spent any amount of time in Westfield who didn't know who Brian Fannion was. It was a pretty full house, and the kind of palpable shock remained throughout the entire proceeding.
Fannion, who appeared for his initial arraignment, entered a plea of not guilty, and sitting right behind him were members of both Brian's and Amy's family.
I can't think of another instance when I've seen the family of a victim sticking up for the accused murderer of their loved one.
And despite the absence of support from members of Amy's family, ADA Sandstrom continued to build her case.
What was Amy Fannion like?
She sounds like a fairy tale. Giving, selfless, completely dedicated to her family.
According to Sandstrom, the night before Amy died, she was making a gift for an upcoming baby shower that she planned to attend and was texting her daughter, Victoria.
Did anyone ever say that Amy was ever suicidal?
She wasn't a person who was ready to die. Amy was healthy, she was happy.
What do you think Brian Fannion's motive was?
He was ready to start a new chapter of his life that did not include Amy Fannion. He's chosen his life partner in Corey. Amy's the only thing standing in the way now.
And that's always the million-dollar question. Why not divorce?
He can't divorce Amy for how he's going to be seen in this community. Divorce is public. But in his mind, murder doesn't have to be.
The trial started today for a former Westfield police officer who's accused of murdering his wife.
On February 23, 2023, in what would be Westfield's most publicized case, Brian Fannion's trial began. He faced a life sentence for the first-degree murder of his wife. 48 Hours made several interview requests to Brian Fannion, his attorney Jeffrey Brown, as well as family members of both Amy and Brian, but never received a response.
This is a big case, a lot of attention. How are you feeling?
For any trial, you're always nervous. And this was probably the most high-profile case I've ever done.
Opening statements revealed conflicting accounts of the circumstances surrounding Amy Fannion's death.
The defendant was a deacon at Wyvern Union Church and an officer for the Westfield Police Department. The evidence will show that while the defendant was repulsed by continuing his marriage with Amy, he couldn't divorce her either, leaving him trapped. And once that evidence is before you, I will ask you to find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree.
Fannion's defense focused on Amy's anger issues and claimed she suffered from anxiety. Brown alleged that on the day of Amy's death, an argument over Brian's retirement plans and his refusal to attend a family member's play pushed her over the edge.
In the days before Amy shot herself, Amy was very mad at him. You had to tread lightly around Amy for fear of setting her off. And at the conclusion of the evidence in this case, I'll ask that you find Brian Fannion not guilty. Thank you.
Anna Hansen, Amy's younger sister, was the first witness for the prosecution. She was the only family member who signed the letter of support that willingly testified against Brian Fannion. Anna stated that during the investigation into Amy's death, her brother-in-law confided that he was worried about searches he had conducted on his computer.
I asked him what that search was, and he said how to make a murder look like a suicide.
He specifically said he searched, quote, how to make a murder look like a suicide?
Those were his exact words.
Anna told the jury that when she asked her brother-in-law why he made this search, Fanyan told her that Amy asked him to do it after they watched a CSI show. It was a show that Anna questioned if Amy had ever watched.
Did she ever say that she liked those shows?
She never shared that with me.
The prosecution's next witness was Fanyan's former lover, a divorced Corey Knowles, now Corey Hastie, who told the jury that Fanyan was concerned about ending his marriage.
Did the defendant ever talk about what would happen to him if he were to divorce Amy?
Yes. If Amy was to ever leave, where he divorced her, that she would take him for everything he's got because he wouldn't be able to sustain on retirement at that point.
The prosecution called Tom Forrest from the cybercrimes unit. All of Fanyan's devices were examined, but it was Fanyan's office computer that produced some curious results. Forrest said Fanyan visited
common and dangerous poisons. Which drug causes the most deaths each year? 16 common household items that could kill you.
But it's only when this affair starts up that all of these incriminating searches start to appear.
Carbon monoxide, the invisible killer, household poisons, common prescription overdoses.
And 11 days prior to Amy's death, Fanyan used his office computer to view a news report on YouTube called What Gunshot Residue Tests Tell Us.
He wasn't assigned to any active investigations in April and May of 2018 that would necessitate looking up gunshot residue. Nobody in the Westfield Police Department does gunshot residue testing.
I was trying to keep a very open mind about what the evidence was going to show, but I didn't think that was great news for Brian Fanyan.
Morning, Your Honor.
Detective John Schrein, a ballistic expert and a crucial witness for the prosecution, testified that Amy's wound was not self-inflicted, citing the absence of gunshot residue near the wound, coupled with the trajectory of the bullet. Schrein concluded that Amy Fanyan was shot from a downward angle and at a distance of at least 18 inches, not at close range as Fanyan had claimed.
Did you form an opinion as to whether or not the defendant's firearm was discharged at a distance of 18 inches or greater?
Over 18 inches. Without anything intervening, that's correct.
After 12 days of testimony and 27 witnesses, the prosecution rested. But waiting in the wings was a defense poised to introduce a significant element that could potentially unravel the DA's case.
Any prosecutor who's not worried about a defense probably isn't a good prosecutor.
What do you think is the most damning piece of evidence? Chat now with the 48 Hours team on Facebook and X.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Defense attorney Jeffrey Brown, whose client faced life in prison, launched a counterattack when he cross-examined Fanyan's former lover, Corey Hastie. According to the state, Fanyan's affair was the primary motive for murdering his wife. But Hasty admitted to the defense that when she ended their relationship, Fannion didn't try to stop her.
When ultimately you ended it with Brian, his response was okay. Isn't that right?
To my recollection.
He didn't say to you, oh my God, I killed Amy for you and you're leaving me. He never said that, right?
Correct.
And what about the websites Detective Forrest from the Cybercrimes Unit said Fannion visited?
Carbon monoxide, the invisible killer, common and dangerous poisons, 16 common household items that could kill you.
The defense argued that some of the websites he visited were related to an aging house, an old wood-burning stove, and the potential hazards it might pose to a young family member.
Did you know that the Fannions were beginning to have a young niece, a child, stay in their home during that time frame?
No, I did not.
But what the defense couldn't reconcile were Fannion searches about gunshot residue days before Amy's death. And there was Amy's sister, Anna, the only family member who willingly testified for the prosecution. She claimed that Brian told her he searched how to make a murder look like a suicide on his computer.
You didn't find any sites that were searched or visited relating to the terms how to make a murder look like a suicide. Isn't that true?
That is true.
The defense narrowed its focus and scrutinized Amy's personality by cross-examining Amy's own mother, Patricia Tarrant.
Did your daughter Amy have a temper?
Yes.
A temper, according to Amy's sister Holly, that would typically be directed toward her husband.
Well, did she snap at Brian in front of you?
She would. I was embarrassed for him. You don't usually talk to your husband kind of in that way. Maybe you reprimand a child, but not a husband.
But would Amy's temper lead to an impulsive decision such as grabbing Fannion's gun? According to Amy's son, Travis, it would.
I could easily picture or envision her grabbing the gun impulsively to make a point that she picked it up intending to complete a trigger pull and shoot herself.
But what would explain the lack of gunshot residue on Amy?
Her wound is consistent with a close-range gunshot wound based on...
Alexander Jason, a senior certified crime scene analyst, testified for the defense.
That's the foundation of the whole prosecution. And this whole idea that it had to be 18 inches because of the absence of gunshot residue is not valid.
Jason says the lack of gunshot residue was not due to distance. It was due to Amy's hair.
What could Amy Fannion's hair have told us?
Amy Fannion had very dense, thick hair that will block the gunshot residue.
Jason's research, Effect of Hair on the Deposition of Gunshot Residue, was published by the FBI's Forensic Science Journal in 2004. Jason says there could have been gunshot residue, commonly known as GSR, embedded in Amy's hair. The crime scene analyst did not test her hair.
What they should have done is taken the hair and then analyzed those little specks to see if they're gunshot residue or not, which was a mistake.
Jason's testimony was limited at trial. To support his theory, he and his daughter Juliana met us at a gun range in California to demonstrate what may have happened to Amy Fannion.
I'm going to fire two times.
Using a .45 caliber gun and ammunition identical to what was found at the scene, Jason fired a single round into a mound of hair backed by a ballistic skin simulant.
So you just shot a .45 caliber gun 3 inches away through hair.
Yes, Amy Fannion had considerable hair, maybe more dense than this, where the bullet entered. And the hair will act as a filter and prevent the gunshot residue from reaching her skin.
For comparison, Jason positioned the gun at the same distance using identical ammunition and fired into the skin simulant without hair.
And I pull this away.
Wow.
You can see there's a big difference. Now look at that. That's a very clean wound. That's a very dirty wound.
That's incredible. All from the hair.
All from the hair. The hair acted as a filter
pretty fascinating.
While Jason believes this scenario is what happened to Amy Fannion, he stopped short of saying whether or not Fannion killed his wife.
The hair filtered that stuff out.
But what he does believe is that basing a case on the absence of gunshot residue is wrong.
And he should not be convicted on that basis. That's my bottom line.
After 40 witnesses and 15 days of testimony, closing arguments.
She raised the gun up to her head in a fit of rage and in effect caused her own death.
This defendant murdered Amy Fannion with deliberate premeditation.
On March 21st, 2023, the jury got the case. And after 2 days of deliberations, the verdict.
Mr. Foreperson, what say you? Is the defendant guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
Guilty of what? Guilty of what degree?
Brian Fannion was found guilty of the first-degree murder of his wife, Amy Fannion, and sentenced to life without parole that same day.
Brian's side of the aisle just collapsed in sobs. These people loved Brian and sincerely thought that he was innocent.
For Assistant District Attorney Mary Sandstrom, Fannion's conviction was bittersweet and hard won.
It's never a victory. Amy Fannion should be here. She should be with her daughter and son and her now grandchildren, and she's not. And it was all for nothing so that Brian Fannion could enjoy his life and end hers.
Brian Fannion's conviction is under appeal.
Join me Tuesday for Postmortem from 48 Hours, where we'll dive even deeper into today's episode and answer your questions about the case.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Allow your imagination to be piqued by stories that are brought to life through captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. As an Audible member, you'll be able to keep your heart rate up month after month because you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. If you're in the mood for a shocking psychological thriller, check out None of This Is True by Lisa Jewell. Embrace brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
If you're listening to this podcast, then chances are good you are a fan of The Strange, Dark, and Mysterious. And if that's the case, then I've got some good news. We just launched a brand new Strange, Dark, and Mysterious podcast called Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries. And as the name suggests, it's a show about medical mysteries, a genre that many fans have been asking us to dive into for years, and we finally decided to take the plunge, and the show is awesome. In this free weekly show, we explore bizarre, unheard-of diseases, strange medical mishaps, unexplainable deaths, and everything in between. Each story is totally true and totally terrifying. Go follow Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're a Prime member, you can listen early and ad-free on Amazon Music.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, Why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.